This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. Lamar White, the publisher of the Bayou Brief, is in the house, and Robin Dow is producing. And the top story today, the House panel investigating the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol laid the blame firmly on Donald Trump last night, saying the assault was spontaneous, was hardly spontaneous, but an attempted coup, a direct result of the defeated president's effort to overturn the 2020 election. This from the Associated Press. With a never-before-seen 12-minute video of the deadly violence and startling testimony from Trump's most inner circle, the 1-6 committee provided gripping details in contending that Trump repeated lies about the election fraud and had a public effort to stop Joe Biden's victory, leading to the attack and imperiling American democracy. "Democracy remains in danger," said Representative Benny Thompson, the pride of Jackson, Mississippi, chairman of the panel, 13-term House member. January 6 was the culmination of an attempted coup, a brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6, to overthrow the government. That from Benny Thompson. The violence was no accident. In a previously unseen video clip, the panel played a clip from former Attorney General Bill Barr, who testified that he told Trump the claims of a rigged election were BS, and he used the full word. In another, the former president's daughter, Ivanka Trump, testified to the committee that she respected Barr's view that there was no election fraud. "I accepted what he said." That from Ivanka Trump. Now, I think of the people we've had on this show, well-versed people, certainly more erudite than the host, people like Billy Tozan, the former congressman who insists there was election fraud. Well, he got duped, but Ivanka Trump, the daughter of the president, did not. What does that say about our country? People tend to believe what they want to believe, despite the evidence to the contrary. Lamar White, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. My thoughts are that this was always a farce, and you're right. We do have a sort of a media problem and a disinformation problem in America. And this is, you know, our media culture reinforces our preconceived notions. Fox News last night did not play any of the hearing. Its audience did not want to hear it.
That's what they say. Fox was the notable exception. Other networks carried it. Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity ran commercial-free programs as the bipartisan select committee's first primetime hearing aired with only brief pauses on most other channels. And so Fox News said, no, we're not going to show this, and I think we know why, because it doesn't fit the narrative that Fox has been presenting for the last year and a half. And as we know, that is a lie. Joe Biden won the election. It was not even close. Mitch McConnell said it was a landslide for Biden, and it was, by actual votes, more than 7 million. And in the Electoral College, Trump would have had to swing three big states to win. Not just one, not two, but three. And no state was closer than 10,000 votes. So it was not a razor-tight election. It certainly was not like 2000, Lamar. When Al Gore lost in Florida by 537 votes, he won the overall vote, but he lost in the Electoral College 270 to 268. And as we know, the Supreme Court on a 5-4 vote stopped a recount, which would have made Gore president of the United States. Gore lost an election by one vote, and yet he as vice president, certified the election.
Right. It's sort of remarkable, that moment when Al Gore presided over the Senate, over his own electoral loss. And, you know, like you said, there are studies that indicate that Gore, had a full recount been done in Florida, Gore would have won that election. But we moved on. This country moved on from that. It seems like Donald Trump and his supporters have not been able to move on.
And, of course, the beneficiaries of Gore not winning were George Bush and Dick Cheney, who served 8 years as president and vice president. Cheney was perhaps the most conservative vice president in our country's history. He's the primary reason why George Bush was convinced to go to war in Iraq, an ill-fated mission that even Bush admits was terrible, that there were no weapons of mass destruction. And his daughter, Dick Cheney's daughter, has become quite a statesman. A few weeks ago, we had Garrett Graves on this show, and he said it was appalling that that Kevin McCarthy did not have a say in who was on the committee. Well, he wanted Jim Jordan to be on the committee, who's part of the investigation. So, I mean, come on. And right. Two Republicans agreed to be on the committee, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois and Liz Cheney of Wyoming. Liz Cheney is probably headed for defeat. If ever there is a profile in courage, it is Liz Cheney, who is going down to defeat on a principle. And here was Liz Cheney, Congresswoman Cheney, last night as the vice chair of this committee, describing the scenario that was January 6th.
There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain. Finally, I ask all of our fellow Americans, as you watch our hearings over the coming weeks, please remember what's at stake. Remember the men and women who have fought and died so that we can live under the rule of law, not the rule of men. I ask you to think of the scene in our Capitol Rotunda on the night of January 6th. There, in a sacred space in our constitutional republic, the place where our presidents lie in state, watched over by statues of Washington and Jefferson, Lincoln and Grant, Eisenhower, Ford, and Reagan. Against every wall that night encircling the room, there were SWAT teams, men and women in tactical gear with long guns, deployed inside our Capitol building. There in the rotunda, these brave men and women rested beneath paintings depicting the earliest scenes of our republic, including one painted in 1824 depicting George Washington resigning his commission, voluntarily relinquishing power, handing control of the Continental Army back to Congress. With this noble act, Washington set the indispensable example of the peaceful transfer of power.
All right, that's Liz Cheney. And by the way, the Louisiana delegation, Garrett Graves, Steve Scalise, Julia Letlow, Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson, they all voted against this committee even being installed. And if the Republicans had a majority in the House, which they may get back in a few months, there would not even be an investigation from the U.S. House of Representatives. And it is interesting that instead of attacking the evidence, I saw Kevin McCarthy saying, why aren't we having hearings on gas prices and baby formula and inflation? No mention, by the way, that the deficit decreased from $2.7 trillion to $1 trillion last year. No mention of that at all, by the way. But at any rate, it's politics, and there is a political element to this, no doubt. But this is serious business. There is no doubt that new ground was covered, and you have Ivanka Trump, the daughter of the President of the United States, who basically said her dad was full of it, that he was wrong. And Lamar, I think that's notable.
It is notable. It's also somewhat not surprising to me. Anyone that possesses the ability to, you know, rational thought and can see the evidence for themselves, it was very clear. I'm not surprised that Ivanka Trump recognized that her father lost the election, even if he has not.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Lamar and yours truly.
Hey, so for years, I guess since the Vietnam War, we've seen protests on the left that have been far more extreme. I mean, the Weather Underground, killed police officers, security guards.
When has the Capitol been breached before? I think it's 1804.
Well,
it's been a while.
Protest. Okay, can I get to my
point? Well, you just misstated it. This has never happened. This has not happened in modern time. I mean, the British burned down the Capitol many years ago.
But the election was rigged, right? Okay, whether they're right or wrong, they thought it was rigged. Whether they're right or wrong, I'm not saying it was rigged. Okay,
all right.
But you yourself have brought up the election of 2000. You yourself have brought up maybe that the Russians helped Trump win in 2000. So we have an election integrity problem, and we need elections. You know, the mail-in voting, I don't think was good. Okay, we need to make sure that elections before the election, that everybody has confidence in this election, so that when the winner is announced, everyone feels that person actually won that election. And you yourself have brought up past elections that you thought were rigged as well.
I didn't say they were rigged. I think that the Supreme Court voted 5-4. I disagree with the vote,
so
but doesn't mean it was rigged.
Did Gore win the 2000 election, or did Bush win it?
Well, Bush won it.
You say several times that Gore won the 2000 election.
No, I said Gore won the overall vote, which he did. And he would have won the election had five Republican appointed justices not voted to make George Bush president.
And by
the Russians obviously wanted Vladimir Putin wanted. No, you can't put words in my mouth, Patrick. And by the way, this election in 2020 was no closer than the election in 1988. And imagine if Michael Stanley Dukakis had said, voter fraud, he would be in a straitjacket, and you know it. And we'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Always good to hear from Patrick and his Walled Estates. And Lamar White is at your service, the publisher of the Bayou Brief. 877-217-5757 is your number. And I guess the question based on this evidence is whether it'll really make a difference, Lamar. Is this a case in which those who don't like Donald Trump won't like him even more, and those who do like him will say, go get him, he's my guy in 2024?
Well, perhaps some people's ideas are just baked in, but I think that if anyone has an open mind and listens to the evidence, that it was pretty convincing last night and will be, I think, even more convincing in the days to follow. I will say that to Patrick's point, after the 2000 election, there was never any violent protest by people on the left. Just worth noting.
No, and Albert Gore graciously accepted defeat and said, it's time for me to go. And this is the same Albert Arnold Gore who fought for his country in Vietnam while Donald Trump got out on fake bone spurs and Joe Biden got out with fake asthma. And George Bush never reported to his National Guard unit in Alabama. And Bill Clinton, he got student deferments. He, of course, is the one who was not a draft dodger, even though he got a high draft number. He was not technically a draft dodger, but he didn't want to fight. And we go down the list. Dick Cheney, he didn't want to fight. He got five or six draft deferments. The only president, Dan Quayle, only president or vice president of that era who fought in Vietnam was a guy named Al Gore. Now, that guy is a patriot. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. And yeah, the truth will just always come out, especially if you're sworn to an oath not to lie to a congressional committee. This is a rotten shame that the Republicans have to stick with their story because it's loyalty to the criminal enterprise that they are.
All right. Well, in Louisiana, we still have more Democrats, believe it or not, than we do Republicans, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. And you know what? A lot of those Democrats voted for Donald Trump. They had to because he won by 400,000 votes here twice. People in Louisiana love this guy. He got over 85% of the white vote in both elections for president of the United States in Louisiana. And the Southeastern Conference is his base. It's not budging. And these congressional members, they're not going to challenge him. The only one who had the audacity to challenge him was Bill Cassidy. And Bill Cassidy, of course, may be term limited as a result of that. Lamar, we saw Congressman in Mississippi, Michael Guest, voted for this commission, and now he's in a runoff in Mississippi because of it. Why do the Southerners love Donald John Trump, who is the least Southern of all recent presidents?
Well, I think that Donald Trump is he campaigned with a bunch of dog whistles, sort of the Southern strategy element to this. But I point out that Donald Trump also showed up three times in Louisiana to campaign against John Bel Edwards, and that didn't work out for him.
It did not, although it was close, and 40,000 votes. John Bel won as a conservative Democrat. But Donald Trump didn't have the coattails to bring Eddie Rasponi across the finish line. This is true. So the adoration for Trump in Louisiana extends only to Trump. And this is from white folks who love this guy. And for whatever reason. Maybe it's because they want to be like him. That's what Scott Wilfong has said. You know, they'd love to live the life Trump does. He says what he wants to say with impunity. He lives the life he wants to live in glorious fashion. He has a beautiful wife. He has the life that many view as the dream, Lamar White.
I suppose it's not my dream life, but, you know, I guess he is, for some people, the version of the American dream that they aspire to.
Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Kevin, you're on with Lamar White of the Bayou Brief.
Yes, you asked why they like Donald Trump so much in the South, because the same way they liked the Jefferson Davis before the Civil War.
All right. Well, you're saying he's got a racist element to his presentation, and you're not the first to say that, Kevin. Lamar, I hate to say a person is a racist. I don't know Donald Trump's heart, but I do think he appeals at times to the lowest common denominator in our society.
Yeah, well, I'll say he's a racist. He's a racist. He campaigned on building a border wall with Mexico and making Mexico pay for it. So it's just a racist dog whistle. And one of the first things he did was implement a travel ban against all Muslims. This is something that only a bigot would do.
And he has amazing charisma. And as I stated, I suspect if you were to give an IQ test that several members of our congressional delegation would exceed Donald Trump, who, by the way, never released his college transcript. He railed against Obama for not doing it, and then yet he didn't do it. And he started at Fordham 2 years, went to Penn 2 years, and we don't even really know if he graduated. He says he did, but, you know, as we know, he lies about everything. He lied about going to the Capitol.
Apparently he had someone take the SAT for him, according to his niece.
James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Lamar White.
Hi, Jim. Good morning. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Lamar. Well, as expected, the day after the hearings, the morning after. And by the way, there are some conservatives down here. You hear it on some talk radio programs who believe that the 2020 election that elected John Bel Edwards was also stolen. Because 2019. My bad. The election was stolen. Dominion machines. The elections are corrupt. And Kyle Arndt is not doing anything to correct it. Now, again, as expected this morning, instead of Trump being responsible for what happened, no, it's Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi failed to call out the National Guard. AP fact check, that is a lie. She has no responsibility or directives over the National Guard. So it's more deflection, more lies. We got to protect Trump because Trump is the new political messiah and their god. Thanks, Jim.
Well, Nancy Pelosi on that day was running for her life, literally. Donald Trump was, he was snugly in the White House after he lied and said he would go to the Capitol with these people. He did not, of course. And of course, if it came to some sort of a fistic encounter, Mr. Trump would be a great disadvantage. He's in terrible physical condition. I don't know if he could even make the walk, much less handle himself in some kind of violent altercation with somebody. I think he's not up to par when it comes to that. Stuart downtown. Stuart, you're on with Lamar White.
Jim, Lamar in the audience, good morning. Jim, it's a little disappointing that you claim that you don't want to readily label Mr. Trump the racist that he is and why Louisiana loves him so much. Come on, Jim. These people like him so much because they are just innately, deeply just like him, and he is, quote, no pun intended, their Trumpeteer. So that's why they like him. I mean, come on, Jim. Let's be real about this. You're an extraordinarily intelligent man.
Well, they're not just like him, though, Stuart. Trump lives a life that people in Louisiana don't live. They might, as I said, they might think they'd like to live his life, but they don't. And he has. Do you really think Donald Trump would be at home at the Jambalaya Festival in Gonzales? You think he'd find that a good place to spend a weekend? I don't think so. Or the Crawfish Festival in Breaux Bridge? I don't think you're going to see Donald Trump there. But a lot of people who attend those events, they voted for him. Scott in Central. Scott, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. I wanted to hear Lamar's. I got a comment and let him hear what he thinks about it. As far as election rigging, look at what the Republicans are doing, because they know they're a minority party. They can't attract majority in the popular vote anymore. But specifically up in Wisconsin, I think Democrats got like 55% of the vote overall, but they've only got 43% of the congressional seats. I mean, if that's not election rigging, and then
I don't mean to interrupt. We are going to a break, Scott, but there has been some gerrymandering on the other side too, where Democrats. But I know what you're saying. Look at North Carolina, for example.
That is true, but not to the extent. And that, this voter suppression, that's strictly because they know they can't win the popular vote.
Well, you make some good points, and we'll pick up with them with Lamar White when we return after this brief pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Lamar White of the Bayou Brief is with us, and there is much happening independent of the House panel investigating the insurrection. A primetime start was last night, and it'll continue next week, and we will, of course, talk about it. And before we move on to other matters, Scott in Central was talking about how the Congress is not reflective of the country, and in many ways he is correct. For example, the Senate is split 50-50, 50 Democrats, 50 Republicans, but the 50 Democrats, Lamar, represent 56% of the country. When it comes to population, the 50 Republicans represent 44% of the population. So if we were looking at that, it should be 56-44. And the U.S. Supreme Court, if we have an evenly divided country with perhaps a few more Democrats than Republicans, there should be 5 appointees from the Democratic Party and 4 from the Republican. As far as presidents, instead, we have 6 from the Republicans and 3 from the Democrats. It is not really reflective of the country.
That's right. And 5 of the conservative justices on the Supreme Court were appointed by a president who did not win the popular vote.
That is correct. The only one who's legitimate is Clarence Thomas.
That's right. That's
ironic. I thought you'd like that. 877-217-5757. Well, Bill Cassidy, who came across as a statesman by voting for impeachment, voting for the investigation, he was right down the list as far as saying President Trump had to go based on his actions of 1-6. Now, Cassidy claims people need AR-15s to defend themselves from feral pigs. And he said this. He said this after the tragedy in Uvalde. What in the world is our senior senator thinking, Lamar?
I think he's thinking that he wants to run for governor of Louisiana.
Is that going to help him?
I suppose that's what his thinking is. I'm not sure it's going to help him. It's kind of a bizarre statement about feral pigs.
Well, if he runs against a fellow Republican, and that would be the most likely scenario if Cassidy were to become viable, that he'd be in a runoff with a Jeff Landry or a John Kennedy or somebody like that, then he would be running to the left of them. And these statements and the vote against Ketanji Brown Jackson, they could come back and I think hurt him, and he could end up, we could very much, if it comes down to Cassidy and Landry, end up with Governor Jeff Landry.
It's possible, although I see Jeff Landry as sort of very similar to David Bitter in 2015, just sort of a toxic candidate for many, even on the right. He's very a divisive candidate.
I think he's a better candidate. He doesn't have the prostitution thing. And let's face it, and Carville has said it, that John Bel Edwards is a once in a generation candidate. He's a pretty good candidate. If you're gonna put a Democrat in a test tube and create a candidate, it would be John Bel Edwards, because he is conservative on the issues that are near and dear to Louisianians, and he's socially liberal on things like Medicaid and Obamacare, and he has governed from, I think, the middle. He's to the left on some things, to the right on others, and there aren't many people like him, and I don't know if anybody could pull this off other than John Bel Edwards.
It's a good point. And his Prostitutes versus Patriots ad was probably one of the best ads in Louisiana political history.
I don't think there's any doubt. That was Mary Patricia Ray, who did the research and found out that David Vitter missed a vote in Congress for veterans while he was consorting with a prostitute in Washington, D.C. But David Vitter is now a multimillionaire lobbyist, and his wife is a federal judge. This is a great country, Lamar White.
A multimillionaire lobbyist who represents Russian interests, incidentally.
That is true. That is true. No doubt about it. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Lamar. Good morning.
Morning. Can Trump's popularity be any surprise in a state that prioritizes football one-loss records over libraries and sex harassment charges, oil and gas profits over clean air and water?
Well, Donald Trump fits right in all across the SEC, Dan. I looked the other day. I think the SEC, the 11 states in the Southeastern Conference, collectively have 152 electoral votes. And in two elections, Trump is 21-1 in the SEC, the lone loss coming by less than a percentage point in Georgia. So he probably, if he runs in 2024 as the Republican nominee, he'll get all the SEC states, probably, which means he starts with 152 electoral votes. Then we add in states like Oklahoma, where he got every county in Oklahoma, every county, twice. Let's go to Kansas. Let's go to Nebraska. Let's go to the Dakotas. Let's go to Wyoming, Montana, Idaho. Donald Trump starts with about 200 electoral votes firmly in his corner, Lamar White.
And I hate to say this, but Texas as well.
Well, Texas is part of the SEC, yeah?
Of course. But a big state, a big state with a lot of votes.
That's right. Texas and Florida are now the number two and number three states in America as far as population. And Donald Trump, of course, is a Floridian. That was a brilliant move, by the way, to move to Florida. He's a native son, Lamar.
He's in New York.
He's a native son, yeah.
He could have been in legal trouble if he stayed in New York, even more legal trouble. It was a shrewd move.
Well, there is a U.S. Senate race in Louisiana. And speaking of guns, John Kennedy, a listener notes, is in favor of ghost guns, and he is. But Luke Mixon, he says he'd like he likes a bill that Congress passed the other day, but he's against assault weapons being banned. And here is Gary Chambers, who you might have thought would carve out a message to the left of Luke Mixon on this, saying he's against all kinds of high-powered weaponry being available to the citizens to go out and massacre kids. But instead, here's Gary Chambers, who's coming across more pro-gun than John Kennedy. Here we go.
As a parent and a son in America, I'm stuck in the middle. In a state ranked 18th for gun ownership, 50th in crime, and 48th in education, owning a firearm isn't just a right, sometimes it's a necessity. White supremacy is still being taught in America. The proof? A white supremacist went into a grocery store in Buffalo and killed elders shopping for food. In them, I saw my mother. Children in Texas killed in a school days later paint a picture of troubled 18-year-olds in their room plotting the legal purchase of assault weapons. As a parent, I saw my child and wept. I own a gun because it is my right to protect my family. I own a gun because America refuses to protect all of us. Background checks, safe storage laws, and raising the age of gun ownership is about public safety. And I'm running for the U.S. Senate so our parents can make it home from the grocery store and our children can make it home from school. I'm Gary Chambers, and I approve this message.
Another well-done spot by Gary Chambers, but Lamar, the message, some might find a bit surprising.
It's a strange message. It's a mixed message, too. I'm not sure if he's supporting sort of vigilante justice or self-defense. It's hard to tell.
Hey, he is an interesting fellow, no doubt about that, and he's going to get some votes. I don't think he's going to win the election, but I don't think he's going to make a runoff, but he has a movement, and it is interesting, though, the people who are supporting that man are largely on the left side of the spectrum, and they probably don't like this message as much as the one when he was smoking pot and the other one when he was burning the Confederate flag. Bill Bryan sends this, a progressive organization led by an LSU adjunct, has sent a letter to LSU Board of Supervisors member Lori Aronson, a gun company CEO demanding action on gun violence. The organization 10,000 Women Louisiana, chaired by Former State Representative Melissa Flournoy, the professor, asked that Lipsy Aronson, CEO of Lipsy's, one of the largest firearms wholesalers in the country, it is the largest, by the way, direct the company to cease distribution of automatic and assault-style semi-automatic weapons to the general population. Given the recent traumatic AR-15 violence tragedies around the country, we ask you to consider what you can do as a mother, a community leader, and as a recognized philanthropic business leader. And the Reveille, which wrote a story about this, the LSU paper, says Aronson has not responded to a request for comment. So I have a feeling that Lipsy's is going to continue to sell AR-15s, Lamar.
I have a feeling that you're correct. Although, you know, major retailers like Walmart, Dick's Sporting Goods, they've already stopped years ago, actually. But yeah, this is what they do for a living, the Lipsy's.
I have a feeling their business would be okay without this, though. You know, some people, and I'll give them this, not everybody who is in favor of widespread gun rights is a nut. But when you see those kids massacred to the point where they can't even be identified in Uvalde, Texas, it is sobering. And I have a feeling that one of those pictures will come out, and it may have the same impact that the photo of Emmett Till had in the mid-1950s.
It's hard to even talk about. It's just horrifying.
It's horrifying, and those are killing machines. They're not sporting apparatuses, and they're not used to kill feral hogs by many people, but they are used to kill kids. And here the other day, that vote in the House was not even a vote on banning assault weapons. It was simple stuff, like raising the age from 18 to 21 for purchase. And the House voted almost overwhelmingly along partisan lines. And in Louisiana, Graves, Scalise, Higgins, Letlow, and Johnson all voted no. What does that say, Lamar?
I'm not sure what it says, but I mean, that they haven't done their homework. I mean, the fact that in Texas, for example, you can't purchase a handgun until you're 21, but you can buy one of these weapons at the age of 18. Just there's a disconnect there. And, you know, as we know about the science about prefrontal cortex development, young men and impulse control, and 40% of the mass shootings in America since 1966 have been committed by someone under the age of 25. Only 4 of the last 196 mass shootings have been committed by a woman. So this is a problem we have with young men.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Lamar White, and then we'll hear from a fascinating author, Brid Hawthorne. Her book is Raising Anti-Racist Children, and Brid is a person of extreme interest. She's not only a mom, but she's an activist and has some authority on this topic. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Robin Dow is producing, and Lamar White with us for just a few more moments, and we did want to get the publisher of the Bayou Brief on congressional redistricting. A special session starts in 5 days, and Judge Shelley Dick has thrown out the districts which are gerrymandered in Louisiana. A crazy setup in which Troy Carter represents North Baton Rouge, the congressman from New Orleans, 100 miles away from where he lives. Lamar White, is this going to make any difference?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, Fifth Circuit issued a stay, and I guess that responses are due today at 4 p.m. So I guess we'll see what the state does and what the defendants do. But, you know, her opinion was exhaustive and, you know, laid out the facts, I think, pretty extensively. It's 152 pages, so I encourage people to read it.
And I must say I haven't read it, but others have and have told me about it, and I do plan on reading it. But it goes into detail about previous elections and how race plays a critical factor in Louisiana.
Yeah, that's right. It does. And it also goes into the fact that, you know, we're a state with a population that is 32% African-American, but only 1/3 of black people in Louisiana live in a district in which there's a black representative. Compared to 91% of whites, something like that, who live in a district with a white representative. So there's a huge gulf there.
And now we're seeing a case in which, as I stated, 85% of the white people in this state voted for Donald Trump twice. So race, we don't like to talk about it, but race, unfortunately, it matters a whole lot when these district lines are drawn and these congressional members, they want it the way it is, including Troy Carter, I might add. He kind of likes it the way it is.
I'm sure that Troy would be fine under a redistricting scheme, though, as well. So,
yeah, he'll be fine, but he likes the supermajority, and the Black Caucus got the willies when Joe Gow, in a fluke, beat Bill Jefferson, who was under indictment, but that was only a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and easily Louisiana could elect two Black congresspeople, and it doesn't even take a Black majority to do it. In Baton Rouge, we have a 46% Black electorate, and yet we've elected a Black mayor five consecutive times. So it just has to be competitive. But I think Judge Dick would like to, and Governor Edwards, they'd like to see a Black majority that would make it almost a given that a Black would win in another district, and that would be reflective of the population. So we shall see.
Right. One vote, one person, so...
And one-third of six is two. Thank you, Lamar.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank
Keep
you.
Keep going. Always a pleasure. Britt Hawthorne is with us. She's a Black biracial mama, teacher, author, anti-bias, and anti-racist facilitator. And with her partner, she is raising her children to become empathetic, critical thinkers who embrace justice and activism. And she has written a book called Raising Anti-Racist Children. So... Britt Hawthorne, easier said than done. How can we as a people do this kind of thing?
Hey, Jim. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show today. I'm really honored and excited to talk about my book. And I think that's a great question. One of the first questions people often ask me in my work as an educational consultant is how young or when do I start? And there's a couple different ways that we can approach the conversation. But one thing I always try to get across to caregivers and educators is that it truly is never too young to start talking about racism and to practice anti-racism. Of course, our language is going to shift depending on our children's age, and the practices will shift. And I go into that in great detail in my book, and I break it down by ages and developmental stages and kind of really show caregivers how we can span this work over a course of our child's lifetime.
Well, it's interesting that you go places that most people might not think about when it comes to race, but one of them is that you are a proponent, and I love this, of healthy bodies. Tell us more.
Yes. So one thing when I started early in my journey of practicing anti-racism, you know, I was looking at race in almost like a vacuum, is that it only happens in one segment or one area. And then in my book, I decided to break it into a couple different sections. And one of the very first sections is healthy bodies. And it's this idea of how do we challenge Eurocentric beauty standards? How do we talk about ways that racism also permeates things like featureism and colorism, texturism, which, you know, we just got the Crown Act that was passed, saying that an employer cannot discriminate against a person's hairstyle or hair texture. And they have the right to wear their hair in a way that protects their hair and cares for their hair. And so healthy bodies also goes into practices. One of my very favorite practice in the book is the pink tax practice. And I use it with my own children. And we have a 15-year-old and a 9-year-old. And you simply, when you're at the store and you're buying your necessities and you're at a big box store, you look at razors, right? And it's by the same brand, same company that's making it, and one razor is blue and another razor is pink. And then you look at the price and you say, this is curious. One cost more, which one? And then what system do we call that, right? And so healthy bodies is both affirming the bodies that we have been given, the bodies that we have, and it's also thinking about how there's an intersectionality between racism and sexism and the patriarchy. And then how do we, of course, do this with young children in a way that's going to be practical and concrete for them?
And you believe that not only should we have healthy bodies, and I gather what you're saying with healthy bodies is that go with what you have. Some people are never going to be Twiggy, and some guys are never going to be Herschel Walker, but go with what you have and do the best with what you got. And you like radical minds. When radical is one of those words that has a political tinge to it, but you believe it's a very good way to think. Why?
Yes. You know, there's that very famous quote where it says, you know, in order to be radical, you have to grab things at the root. And I love that. I love that idea. And so for me, radical minds is grasping things at the root. And I think a part of having a radical mind means having a liberating language. And so both what's the language that I'm using when I'm having these conversations? In the beginning part of my book, I go into defining our understanding and I talk a little bit about the language I use, why I choose to use, you know, white dominance and white domination as a way when I'm working with children, I'm working with learners to talk about how whiteness has been constructed to both wound and exclude, but also really to dominate land, dominate cultures, dominate language. I use that over white supremacy. Same thing with people of the global majority. When I use that phrase instead of people of color with children, it allows us to engage with media, to engage with our books, our toys, and say, wow, if, you know, brown and black folks and East Asian folks are of the global majority, is this an accurate representation that we're seeing right now? So radical minds is really about that liberating language.
The book from Simon & Schuster from Brit Hawthorne is Raising Anti-Racist Children. A listener asks a good question. And that's your personal voyage. You obviously didn't get to the place you are now without some life experience. What made you the person you are, Britt?
Yeah, I love this question because one thing I really love sharing with folks is that, you know, I was not born woke by any means. I'm a proud product of public education here in the United States. And so, but I am really enjoying waking up. And so a part of that in my journey was I'm trained as a classroom teacher. My undergrad is in elementary education. And anyone who's worked in the education system here in the United States, we see firsthand the deep inequities that exist in our classrooms. We see how children are coming in at kindergarten and first grade. And I love how Gloria Gladstone-Billings coined that word, the phrase education debt, instead of achievement gap. But we're already seeing that that's happening. And so for me, my own journey was trying to figure it, not only the why, but then really figure out, well, what are the solutions? How do we in fact close this achievement gap? And that's what led me into anti-racist work. And then, so I used to just solely work in the education sector. And then what happened, and this is the beginning story of my book, the time our youngest child was 4 years old, and he had told me that a teacher had told him to shut up. And when I talked to the teacher about it, and she admitted that she told him to shut up, and I said, well, if he was talking, who was he talking to? And she said, oh, so-and-so, which was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy. It was my son's best friend at the time. He had just moved back from France. And I said, well, if they were both talking, did you tell him to shut up? And the teacher said, no. And I said, and this is the problem here. When we think about how do children learn prejudice, how do they learn racism, how do they rationalize things at 4 years old, when one child is being unfairly disciplined and told something you should never tell a four-year-old versus another child. And then that really is what jumpstarted my journey into bringing this into the caregiving world and the parenting world.
The book is Raising Anti-Racist Children, a practical parenting guide from Britt Hawthorne. She has a website too, BrittHawthorne.com. A listener does it. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Midwest in a city called Rockford, Illinois.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, yeah. You know, remember beautiful city.
Janet Lynn, the, ice skaters from Rockford, Illinois. But anyway, that was before your time. But I hear it's a great city.
Anytime, you know. we always know folks who do great things in Rockford, so we know.
Well, and you're one of them. Congratulations, Britt Hawthorne. Signature support from First Financial and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet.